Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter. Welcome back, Cardinal fans. After last week's visit with Brett Coleman, we now have one of our all-time favorite guests in Kyle Odegaard, former beat writer for the Cardinals, and then now the guru over at Odds Guru over at bettingodds.com. Kyle, welcome back to Red Rain. How are you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Kyle's Sacramento Kings got whacked last night, so he's a little glum, but he works, does their broadcasts.
Suns country out here, and they're not doing too great either, so commiseration out here.
Yeah.
It's a matter of expectations, because we have the exact same record right now. We're both 42 and 30.
Right.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Heading for probably a playoff series against each other, I imagine, at some point. So someone will get hot. It's bound to happen. So, Kyle, let's get right to the odds. What are the current odds that the Cardinals will stay put at 4 if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there?
Yeah, there's not exactly a bet for that, but basically Marvin Harrison Jr.'s odds to be picked number 4 is still right around minus 200, which basically equates to about a 2/3 chance that they stick and pick, and then a 1/3 chance that they would probably trade down. So staying there and taking Marvin is still definitely the favorite among the betting markets, but that stuff can move pretty quickly, especially, you know, you get more J.J. McCarthy reports out there or some other trade happens or whatever. It could swing pretty wildly. But at this point, I think I would probably say like 66% chance that they stay and take him, and then probably around 34% that they would drop down. So not an upset at all if they do trade, but I still think Marvin is the more likely scenario.
Yeah, so Cardinal fans, if you've been following Kyle Odegaard's articles, you know recently he's been doing this great thing of decoding interviews with Monty and JG. So, Kyle, we're going to give you a line from yesterday's interviews at the owners' meeting. First, okay, so decode this one. It was, well, actually, they're from JG. JG said, we're going to let Monty do his thing.
Yeah, I mean, that one's probably one of the rare ones where they're not being a little bit coy about something. Like, I think they do trust him. So that one actually does not have to be decoded. I think, like, from what Monty did last year, clearly there's kind of that pecking order of there's collaboration, but JG knows that this isn't his lane. It's like Monty Austin Force, the GM.
Right.
He's the one that's making those big decisions. So I think they like to be secretive about a lot of stuff, but that's one where it's like, yeah, Monty is going to do his thing for sure. And they trust him. I mean, you saw what he did last year in the draft. He did a really great job. And I think they're just hoping to catch lightning in a bottle for a second straight year.
Right. So, and then when JG was asked about Marvin Harrison Jr., his response was, we're going to do what's best for the football team.
Yeah. For that one, it feels like we really, really like Marvin, and we're waiting to see if somebody's going to come up, bowl us over with an offer, probably Minnesota, maybe a dark horse team. You never know. But I think, like, you look at what Marvin's done, you look at his character, you look at everything about him, he just screams like elite prospect. So I think, like, obviously you are going to do what you want to do, what's best for your team. But I think they're really just saying like, hey, we're open enough where you guys need to offer us something, but we're going to just take this guy if it doesn't bowl us over. So I think they're really goading teams into like, hey, this is possible if you really push all in and give us a really great deal, because the Cardinals are definitely in a position of strength where they can just stay there, take a guy who's probably going to be their number one receiver for many, many years and go forward that way. So I think everything they're dropping in the media is just a reminder that, like, hey, we're in a really good position and you need to come really hard with these offers if you want to go up to number four.
Yeah, it was interesting that Monty last week said, I want to put up a neon sign.
Yeah.
For talks. That was interesting because I think, too, at the time, people were speculating that when the Vikings picked up that extra first round pick, that they had assurances from some team up in the top five or six that they could trade up. And so, you know, Cardinal fans were wondering, could it be that Monty already has kind of a tentative deal in place with the Vikings? Were the Cardinals the ones that gave the Vikings the assurance? But, you know, 2 days later, Monty's saying, oh, neon sign, we're wide open, which made me think, well, maybe the Cardinals aren't the ones that if indeed the Vikings have assurances from somebody up there, and it could be with Harbaugh and the Chargers at five. Sean Payton yesterday at the owner's meeting said, it's great to be Monty Ossenfort right now. How do you want to decode that?
Well, Sean Payton is a guy you do not have to decode, because he says exactly what's on his mind at all times. And he's like, he's so transparent. I remember during the coaching search, listening to him, it's like, man, he just puts it all out there. And right. I guess when you won a Super Bowl and won all these games, you're not worried about playing the games as much through the media. So to me, it's refreshing when somebody's that honest and have a little Bruce Arians tinge to it, where Sean Payton just says exactly what he's thinking. And I mean, he's 100% right. Like, the draft certainly feels like it's going to go quarterback, 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 top three. So the Cardinals are the pivot point, and they're in a great spot because they do have Marvin Harrison as the option. And then that fourth quarterback, like, if somebody wants them bad enough, then they're going to have to come to the Cardinals and say, this is what you will give you. I do feel like, knowing that the Chargers are next and that the Chargers have a quarterback, it takes a little bit of leverage off of Arizona. Like, if the Giants were at five, the Vikings would know they'd have to go to four. But at this point, you can go to the Chargers and make the trade and still jump the Giants. So I do think the Cardinals are in a very good position, but it's easy for a team like the Vikings to let the Cardinals pick themselves and then trade with the Chargers too, because obviously the Cardinals aren't taking J.J. McCarthy at four.
Yeah. Despite Mike Tannenbaum's recent mock draft.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah. I actually reached out to him. I asked him if he wanted to go more in depth on it, and he said possibly. So I'm trying to line him up Wednesday or Thursday to try to get an interview. We'll see if it happens. But said, hey, a lot of people in Arizona didn't like that. I was wondering if you wanted to flesh out your thought process a little bit more. So if it happens, I'll definitely put an article up about it.
Oh, great, Kyle. Oh, that'd be really wonderful to see that. Because it would be fascinating to see what he says. I know Tannenbaum's been sort of on the Cardinals to move on from Murray for a couple years now. So it didn't surprise me there. I mean, he was thinking that the Cardinals shouldn't, you know, give Kyler the guarantees that came up in his contract. This was back last year. But ever since then, I mean, you know, Kyler looks like he's just really done a 180, and his commitment now is exemplary. He's in the building every day. He's a presence. He's bonding with teammates. He's, you know, he showed flashes of the brilliant Kyler that we knew back in 21 in his play, in his eight games. You know, the consistency wasn't quite there yet, but you can't really expect that in a new system, having not practiced all off season. And so you know, I mean, the buzz on Kyler in Arizona, I don't see how it can't be anything but very positive at this point and exciting, and to see what, you know, kind of next step he takes. I mean, you know, the last four games, they had the most efficient offense in the NFL, and which is stunning. I mean, you know, when you think about it, that they got it that going that well with the running attack. I mean, things were meshing. I mean, those, that Philly game and the Seattle game, the offense was clicking. Kyler found his way with Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch. And which, by the way, now that I'm thinking about it, is there a contract coming for Greg Dortch?
I don't think so. I think they'll let him play it out. It seems like for the last regime and this one, like, they both liked Greg Dortch, but nobody's been in a hurry to, like, give him 16 or 17 full games as the starter in the slot. And now it feels like he's going to get that opportunity in 2024 if they don't draft somebody. But I don't think it's a position where they're going to extend him, because the offer that they would give him would be like maybe $3 million a year, $4 million a year. And maybe he would take that, but if you're Greg Dortch, you might feel like, hey, let me play 1 year in the slot. If I can put up 800 receiving yards, then all of a sudden I'm in the $8 million a year range or something like that. So I think it'd be a hard negotiation on both sides. Like, where would you meet in the middle for something like that? And he, as much as we love him, he still needs to prove himself over a full season and show that he can be a big time contributor in the passing game. Like, I love the flashes, but he hasn't done it for a full year yet. So I think, like, they'll pay him the peanuts he's getting this year, which is unfortunate for him just with the way the contracts are, that he's still a exclusive rights free agent making like $1 million, but that's kind of is what it is. And then I think after the season, we'll see where he's at, what it looks like. And hopefully for his sake, he can cash in.
Yeah. The, of course, the buzz going on social media was that Dortch was going to get a contract because the Cardinals were posting out like light the Dortch posts on social media. And then there was a cryptic message from Dortch that sounded like today's going to be a great day or something like that. And so people were jumping on that thinking like, oh boy, it could be and the fact that, of course, that you know, kudos to Monty and special teams coach Jeff Rogers for getting ahead of this new kickoff rule by signing DJ Dallas to the 3-year contract that he got, that now takes the pressure off Dortch and allows him to, you know, like you said, focus in on a year, see what he can do at the slot now that he's been going to be given the opportunity. So, pretty cool with that. So overall, the two main questions I want to ask you, before we run out of time, one is, want to get your sense of where you think the Cardinals are roster wise now after the, you know, this free agent signings, and what you think we can anticipate in the draft, and what the most pressing needs are. And then after that, I wanted to touch base with you on what I thought was an amazing job you did in challenging the Arizona media when they had the opportunity to ask Michael Bidwell some key questions about the uncertainty that's been going on with the lawsuits and things like that. So first, let's get your take on free agency and where we are now and what you are expecting for the draft.
Yeah. So I feel like heading into free agency, they had two choices. They could continue to build it a little bit slower, make prudent moves, but not do the big splash, and look at this as a 2-year rebuild, because they did really tear it down last year. They, you know, basically let anybody of significance go that was on an expiring deal, like Byron Murphy and Zach Allen. And obviously they cut D-Hop. So it was a big rebuild. Like you said, they showed enough in the last four games offensively where I felt like they could have accelerated the rebuild a little bit, especially the fact that you have a star quarterback. Like, the roster was not going to be perfect, but I think they could have chosen to be more aggressive if they wanted to, just to make a play in 2024. And you wouldn't have been favored to win the division or make the playoffs or anything like that. But I think they could have, you know, gone for an elite edge rusher or L'Jarius Sneed at corner or something to move the needle a little bit more if they so chose. Re-sign Hollywood Brown or sign another receiver. And obviously Monty Austin Fort decided to do a 2-year rebuild, which is probably the smart thing in the long run, where you're building it slower, making sure you're not overpaying like crazy in free agency for a guy for 25 to 30 million that maybe can't live up to that price. So I understand the philosophy. I do question a little bit about, I wouldn't say they're completely punting on 2024, but it's going to be quite the uphill climb to make the playoffs now. And just the fact that Kyler is 27, you punted last year totally. You're punting 2 years in a row in his prime. And like I said, I feel like if you have a really good quarterback, you have a chance. Yep. Like we saw with Mahomes, that roster on offense was not complete in any sense of the word, but he really lifted them. And having Kyler at the end of the season, with the way that offense moved, you didn't have Hollywood Brown playing. T-Hop wasn't there anymore. Your receiver core was probably the worst in the NFL for those last three or four games, and they still moved the ball really well because of Kyler's feet, because of James Conner, because of Trey McBride. So that was my one question. Like, hey, maybe they're going to kind of, you know, make a little bit bigger of a push this year. And they didn't. So I think I would have personally been a little bit more aggressive to give yourself a little bit better shot, because like you talked about in 21, like Kyler played at an MVP level for what, 10 games or so before it fell off the cliff at the end. Yeah. If he gets to that level, your team probably isn't good enough around him to make a real run again. Right. And maybe they didn't think their offense was good enough, their defense was good enough. So, I understand the thought process, but that was my one qualm maybe, is like they didn't quite do enough to give yourselves a shot in 2024. And I think clearly this is all going to be about 2025 and beyond now.
Yeah. And the odds makers, as you well know now by now, are thinking similarly to you, because the over-under came in at 6.5 wins. What are your thoughts on that?
You initially think it's low, and then you look at the schedule and kind of just do a little bit of predictions in your head, and it's probably right on. Like, I think 6 wins would be a pretty big disappointment. If you go 6-11 this season, I think people are going to be pretty unhappy. Right. If you can get to 7, 8 would be pretty solid. I think if you go 4 wins, and then 6 over 3 years, like, that's going to be a tough sell to the fan base, and it'll definitely get better next year. Like, everything is clearly gearing up toward 2025. And if you look in the division, Matthew Stafford will be another year older. Brock Purdy will finally be getting paid some more money soon and kind of hurt their salary cap situation in San Fran. So there's reasons to push it. I think the Cardinals, the betting markets do not expect much of them this season. And a big part of that is the defense. Like, you didn't address edge rusher. You didn't really address your number one cornerback situation. Like, you do not have a good defense still. So I totally understand where the betting markets are. And to your question about the draft, I think, like, very similar to last year now, where if the opportunity presents itself for a trade down, I think Monty Austin Fort is going to look at it very strongly, because he does think about long-term viability of this team. And he's got a bunch of picks now. So it's just a matter of really hitting on those picks like he did last year. I think he did a phenomenal job in his first year, where Paris Johnson looks very good. Garrett Williams, Michael Wilson, BJ Ojulari showed flashes. Dante Stills, like, you have a lot of contributors right off the jump. And if he can do that again, then your team is looking, pretty, pretty solid. And then I think, the next couple of years could be pretty exciting, but it's a big draft that he really has to nail.
What's really kind of a tenuous situation, or could be, is the combination of rebuilding with the NFL's by far youngest coaching staff. If they continue to lose, and, you know, I mean, look at who they're up against in their own division coaching wise. You know, I mean, at some point, the Mulligans have to stop, right? I mean, there's only so much you can do if we continue to. I mean, if the defense is near the bottom again with a defensive minded head coach, won't the fans get restless?
Well, I don't. I mean, I don't put much of that on Gannon or Rallis. Like, the personnel was just absolutely terrible last year. Like, no coach could have turned that into a productive unit, I don't think. And they're a little bit better this year, but I still think they'll be a bottom 10 defense for sure, probably bottom 5. Like, who are your standouts on defense? And like I said, like, where's your pass rush coming from? You don't have a number one corner. Like, there's still major holes. So I think, like, to me, the offense is the big thing this season, where you've got more pieces on offense. Obviously, you've got Kyler. You've got two good offensive tackles. If you have Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison Jr., you've got some good passing targets. So it's pretty intriguing where they go offensively. But I just think, like, defensively is going to be another grind. Maybe you show incremental progress. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The seat can get hotter for coaches after 2 years. I don't think expectations are through the roof. Like, when I posted that over-under, people were, like, actually very understanding about where it was, which surprised me. I thought they would be more upset that it was at 6.5. But I think within the fan base, there is kind of an understanding that it's going to be 2 years. So I do think this GM head coach combo has a little bit of a leash, kind of like the first 2 years of Cliff Kingsbury. They won 5 games and then they won 8, and people were excited about, you know, right. I guess they started 8-6. So it fell off a little bit at the end there, but overall the trajectory was good with Cliff those first 2 years. And if Gannon can get him to 7-10, I think people would be perfectly fine with that. Even 6-11, if you show some progress. And like I said, everything geared toward 2025, where they're definitely going to be pushing in next offseason, trying to make a turn, because you can't take 3 years to rebuild in the NFL. And if it doesn't work then, yeah, then things start to get dicey for sure for everybody. But as of now, I feel like the fan base is pretty excited about what Monty Austin Ford and Jonathan Gannon are both doing. And there is that leash there where they do trust them, and for good reason. I think everything they've shown so far has been good. I think Gannon's game plans and his in-game management has been really solid. So I agree with the fans. We're like, let's let them have some rope and let's see where this thing goes.
Okay. So the last question is, if you had the opportunity to interview Michael Bidwell during that one interview that he gives a year, what were the kind of questions that you would have asked him?
I mean, I think you have to touch on as many of those things as you can, and do it in a way where hopefully you can get some answers, knowing that, you know, there's arbitration involved, there's other things involved. But
right.
I think if you point blank asked him about his treatment of women in the past, his treatment of employees in the past, that's not necessarily diving into the lawsuit. I think you can just see if he has any regrets about his leadership style, about his the way he treated people, because there's plenty of in-depth reports about you know, things that seem like they did not go like they should in a corporate environment, in a work environment. Like, you don't want people to feel like that, you know, at work, especially when there's a power imbalance. Like, if you're the owner of a team and you're talking down to somebody, like has been reported by ESPN and The Athletic, I just think that's not how it should be. Like, I think you should treat everybody with kindness, treat them fairly, and understand the power imbalance of people being intimidated and wondering, like, how this is going to go and being scared. I just think, you know, when people bring up a culture of fear, that type of environment, that's, to me, just such a horrible look for any organization. And That would be the thing I would want to get into the most. Obviously, there's the burner phone allegations, and I tweeted out, you know, last year or so the alleged burner phones that were in use. So I don't think that there's too much question about whether those things existed, and he would right. That would be something where he would probably say he can't talk about it. But right. I just feel like you had to give it a shot at that point. He speaks so infrequently to the media. They had him as an right. exclusive. There's a very easy way to get into it. And even if he just wanted to explain that he's learned something from all these experiences and the lawsuits and the claims, and he's changed. Like, I think right. giving him the opportunity to say that is important too, because maybe there was a genuine period of reflection that went on amidst all of this stuff. And maybe it becomes a good thing in the end, where he looked inside himself and decided to make some changes. So the fact that none of that was addressed was, to me, a big missed opportunity. And like I mentioned in my piece, I know there's a lot of factors. The team is a partner with Arizona Sports, and maybe it was said beforehand that you cannot ask him questions about this stuff, but that's what I wrote. Like, if I'm going to have an opportunity to interview somebody like that and they say I can't ask those questions, I'm just not going to do the interview. I don't want to go and right. do a very easy interview with somebody who's been in the news for so many negative things over the last year or so. Like, that stuff has to be addressed.
Yeah, it seems like in so many of Michael Bidwell's dealings with people and arrangements, there's some sort of quid pro quo involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that nationally for many years now. What I would have loved to ask him is, you know, what is your reaction? Why do you think the players gave ownership an F?
Right.
What's your take on that? You know, I mean, how can you account for that? Why do you think that happened? And what are you doing to try to change it? Now, JG said he said he wasn't going to get too specific, but he said they've got things in the works going about the locker room and changes like that. So, that's all good. I mean, this NFLPA report card stuff is shaking the tree a little bit. What do you think?
I hope so. And in that situation, I don't understand the reason to be vague. Like, Robert Kraft came out and said we're spending $50 million in building a workout facility. So if you're building a new locker room or doing anything, just say it. Like, there's
right.
If you want to keep a competitive advantage and not say Paris Johnson is playing on a left or the right side, like, I think it's silly, but go ahead and do that because you feel like it's going to help you win football games. But what's the point of being coy about improvements in the facility if they're actually there? So to me, like, they should be promoting what they're doing because they need some positive PR, because for two straight years, their own players have graded them very poorly for a lot of the things. And like you said, ownership, getting an F on that sort of thing, it's a pretty bad look. And one thing I also want to say is Jonathan Gannon is kind of a pro at sidestepping questions and being evasive. And Michael Bidwell is not like that. Like, in his interviews, if you ask him something, he's usually going to answer it directly. So, you know, there's people around him that don't want him to answer questions and doing stuff like that. But if you get him, he'll usually be pretty honest about things. So that's another thing. Like, if you asked him about the NFLPA report card, I think he would have really said how he felt about it and what he thought, and whether that would have been accepting it or disagreeing with it. It'd be great to know exactly how he feels about it. But obviously, we have not heard any comment from him. And like you said, hopefully it does spur some action, because I've kind of railed on this a few times on Twitter, but like, they have plenty of money to build a new facility, do anything they want to do. Like, the NFL is such a cash cow. If you really want to spread out a loan and do it over, you know, 20 years or whatever, it's a small drop in the bucket when you talk about NFL revenues, NFL profit. Like, they can build anything, they can renovate, upgrade anything they want to do. So it's just a matter of when they do it, if they do it, and why they're not doing it. But we don't have answers, and I think we should have answers, because it's something that feels like a competitive disadvantage. And right now the Cardinals are behind in that stuff, and it's kind of been the story of their organization for a really long time. And if and when it changes, I think that's a big deal.
What did you think of the new plans for a garden club end zone bistro?
Yeah, I think from an overall atmosphere, it's going to hurt. I you know, I've been to Cowboys Stadium, and the bottom area feels more like not necessarily a club, but kind of like a lounge area. And it doesn't have this like effect of being in this really loud, great home field advantage. It's more like laid back, and that's what you're going to get in those seats. And those are the closest ones. And obviously you yeah. pulled out all the seats from that end zone. So from like an atmosphere perspective, I think it's a negative. From a revenue perspective, I'm sure it'll help. They'll make more money. And if that means something toward upgrades somewhere else, then it can be good. But like I said, they don't need that money to do stuff. They have plenty of money. So I think it's just extra money on top, and we'll see where it goes and how they use it. But to me, yeah, this is the NFL. This isn't like a minor league baseball team. Like you got money to do whatever you want.
Right. Just one final personnel question. I'm fascinated to know your take on what, look into your crystal ball, and what do you think the future is for Buda Baker in Arizona?
I think this is probably his last season in Arizona. Expiring contract. I think he'll be 29 or so at the end of it, 28, 29, 30, something in that range.
Right.
I mean, obviously a very, very good player. We'll see how he gets through this season. If he gets hurt again, that would be two straight years of him getting hurt and missing time. And then you start wondering about his play dropping off a little bit as he gets into his later years. Very small player, a guy who's a violent player. So you just wonder about the wear and tear, almost like a running back, where people don't want to pay running backs once they hit a certain age. And if you're talking about an undersized safety who's getting near 30, to me, like, that's a guy who I'm not in a rush to extend, especially because the way that Eagles built themselves where Jonathan Gannon was, all the focus was on like the defensive line, getting pressure on the quarterback, and then finding some good corners. And I don't think they prioritized safety. So to me, all signs point toward this being Buda's last year in Arizona. And obviously things can change and he can have a great year and they can be more competitive than thought. And then maybe you bring him back, but I feel like they're going to want to allocate those resources somewhere else. And from Buda's side of it, like, he can go get however much he can from somebody else and maybe chase a ring with a contender. Most likely scenario in my head is that this is it. He leaves in free agency and they get a comp pick for him.
So because his guaranteed money's run out, what about this year? Is he going to have to hold out again, or?
I don't think he has any leverage. You look at the safety market, what's he going to say? You know, I'm going to sit, and they're going to say, okay, well then we'll just keep this money. Because he'll lose all the game checks if he sits out. And I think they'll be fine to keep the cap money and let him sit. So I think he's just going to play it out. His leverage was last year. He did a good job of getting a little bit more money from them. Now at this point, you know, he's a year older. He didn't have a great season. He's kind of worth what his contract is. Like, maybe he wants to play hardball and try to get extended, but I'd be shocked if they extended him unless it's a very team-friendly deal. So I think he's just going to come in. You know, you know Buda. He's a good soldier. He's not going to probably make too many waves. He's going to have a smile on his face, play one more year, and kind of like the Chandler Jones situation, maybe try to get an extension and say a few things, but in the end, I think this is his last year in Arizona.
Great questions. I mean, great answers. Excuse me.
We'll see if I'm right, but that's my thought.
Who do you think was the best free agent signing?
I like Jonah Williams. I think solidifying your tackles was important. They talked about that since Monty got here. I think he's a solid player, good contract, $15 million a year for an average tackle is fine. So I was happy with that, and I think him and Paris and Will Hernandez are three offensive linemen that can definitely be above average. And then, you know, Froholt was fine last year. If you can get a solid guard, your offensive line looks pretty good for the first time in a while. So I like that one the best, and didn't love the defensive ones as much, but I think that move was good.
What was the free agent signing you questioned the most?
Justin Jones for sure. I don't think $10 million a year was what you should have spent. And I see Tre'Davious White, and I get that he's coming off an injury, but he's going to get $8 million, and Hollywood Brown got $7 or $8 million. And I know they don't want to fall in the trap of paying guys because of their name, especially guys that are more injury prone. It seems like they really prioritize durability, but to me, there's just not that high end ability for a player like that. I think he might be fine. And if you gave him $6 or $7 million, I would have been okay with that. But that felt like an overpay to me for a guy who has never been, you know, a above average starter, just kind of average at best. Maybe they think he'll fit the scheme really well, but to me, that was the biggest overpay in free agency.
Yeah, good call. Let's bring in Kyle Ledbetter. Kyle, what question do you have for Kyle Odegaard?
Yeah, I wanted to just briefly touch on the defense real quick. They obviously signed Sean Murphy Bunting for the cornerback room. They still bring back Garrett Williams. They bring back Keytrell Clark. Do you expect the Cardinals are going to use one of those picks, either the end of the first round or the beginning of the second round, on a cornerback potentially?
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty obvious one. 27, 35, or if they don't go in either of those, definitely one of those day three picks would be at corner, because I feel good about Garrett Williams. I'm not as high on Sean Murphy Bunting as a lot of people. I know a lot of people like that move. I think he's maybe average at corner, but maybe a little below average. So I think they were talking about him being their number one. I think he's a clear number two corner. So you got to bring in somebody, hopefully with some upside. I think a guy at 27 would be good if you like somebody that's there. And then that kind of solidifies that group. But to me, that group still has a lot of questions. As good as Garrett Williams was last year, it was his first season, kind of a small sample size.
Right.
I don't know if he'll stay in the slot or go outside. If he goes outside, will he have questions there? Like, I love that kid, what he did as a rookie, but he does have to show up for another season before you kind of cement him as an above-average cornerback. But they're definitely a guy short, and I think the draft is the way that they're going to go to fill that.
Are there corners there that you like in particular in the draft?
I don't know too much about them. I think, Nate Wiggins is kind of an interesting one who maybe isn't, the perfect prototype for a corner, but kind of a guy that's made some plays, a fast guy, athletic. I think he's kind of smaller, so that's a question, but Cooper DeJean is kind of an interesting one. If he's around at 27, and he's a very flexible piece, could play safety, I'm sure he could play slot, play outside. So yeah, there's definitely a few guys. Kool-Aid McKinstry, if he's there at 27 or 35, he would kind of pique my interest a little bit. And I think Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell will go earlier, but if anybody falls, they can look at those guys too. But yeah, I think there's definitely a solid group of corners that will be there in that 27 or 35 area, as well as edge rushers.
Good stuff. Kyle, you're awesome. I'm so thankful that we were able to keep you, as Cardinal fans, keep you in the loop when you left, and that, you're giving us such great quality reporting on the Cardinals and prognostications, and it's great to read your stuff, and the recent stuff with the decodings has been awesome.
I try to put a little different spin on it to keep people entertained.
You pull no punches on those. You get right to the gist. But thanks so much for joining us. We were always happy to have you on here, and I wish you a wonderful draft season and a lovely spring. So thanks so much for joining us, and wish you well.
Yeah, not a problem at all. Thanks for having me, and same to you guys. Enjoy the draft. I'm sure it'll be a very exciting one, no matter what they do. Very interesting one if they do trade down with all the reaction from Cardinals fans, but definitely be a fun draft, and happy to jump back on with you guys afterwards, and we can analyze all this stuff as well.
That'll be great. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And so with that, thanks to Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter on behalf of him and Kyle Odegaard. May the red rain shower down on you into the red, red sea. Red rain.